The following is a Super Spectrum Radio production.
Since 1972, Carl Kolchak has reported on the strange and unusual. Las Vegas, Seattle, and Chicago have been just a few of his beats, with Kolchak continuously finding himself face to face with vampires, werewolves, phantoms, and all manner of creature that goes bump in the night. I'm your host, Jason Stevens, and this is the Kolchak Legacy Podcast. So when you have finished this bizarre account, judge for yourself its believability, and then try to tell yourself, wherever you may be, it couldn't happen here. Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Kolchak Legacy Podcast. I'm your host, Jason Stevens, and with me tonight is Matt Pierce, who is witnessing Kolchak the Night Stalker for the very first time before we record these episodes. And tonight's episode features a doppelganger. That's right, we are checking out Firefall. Let's get into it. Episode 6 of Kolchak the Night Stalker, Firefall, first aired November the 8th, 1974. The evil spirit of a murdered arsonist who loved classical music is somehow incinerating his former enemies while simultaneously trying to take life again. Interesting enough. What'd you think about it, Matt?
So this episode completely threw me through like a left turn. Because you watch these, you think, oh, there's a formula to it. Sometimes it's a vampire, sometimes it's a werewolf. Mm-hmm. This whole episode, though, for one, it's kind of scary.
Yeah.
And for two, it doesn't really fit the mold. I like it. Which I like all of them. I mean, it's a good show. I wouldn't be watching it otherwise. But, like, I like that a show can establish itself and still throw watchers for a loop sometimes. And this episode, I feel like, did that.
Yeah, it's very interesting in the way that they portray the doppelganger in general and the effects. Also, the spontaneous human combustion, surprisingly graphic.
Yeah.
So we'll get into the episode here. The introduction from Carl Kolchak. Remember the penny arcades that used to be so much fun when you were a kid? For a handful of coins, you could test your strength, your skill at a pinball machine. Those arcades were a lot of things to a lot of kids. But there was one particular arcade that represented something special to me. It was here that began one of the most terrifying experiences of my life. And we get Carl Kolchak reminiscing about an arcade, and we get a shot of the arcade, and we get to see Frankie Markov, convicted arsonist, basically the victim of a mob hit, while trying to tilt the machine.
He's a pinball wizard. He's like, I thought it was interesting. So arcades, you picture kids playing in an arcade. This is at night, and these are all men in suits with sideburns.
It's the 1970s. This stuff was new.
Yeah.
It was expensive, you know?
Yeah, it's not what you would picture whenever someone said, oh, we're going to do a shot of an arcade.
Yes, but also they do talk about how Rubino's Arcade is a spot for, like, buying and selling drugs.
Yeah, it's a little seedier spot.
It's a seedier spot in town. It's next to a pool hall. Things are happening all the time. So we've got September the 3rd, 1 a.m. 1 a.m. playing that pinball. Markov is shot by two thugs while playing a game of pinball at Rubino's Arcade. We then see, almost immediately, a funeral procession. And it's going down the streets of Chicago, working its way to the cemetery. And to the side of the procession, speeding up in their car, in the back seat is Mr. Ryder Bond. Mr. Ryder Bond, a dapper, gray-bearded gentleman.
Yes.
A conductor of an orchestra.
A very busy, in a hurry gentleman.
Yes, he's a musical prodigy at 14, internationally respected conductor at 40, a gifted man with nearly fatal devotion to punctuality. And that punctuality consists of almost running a hearse off the road to get to the concert hall.
Hey.
This is where his life intersects to destruction.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I guess his thought process is the guy's dead, so he's not going to be upset about waiting.
Yeah, I don't think he thought about it at all. He just had his driver whip in there.
That's true.
The ghost of Markov, not interested whatsoever.
Oh, actually, now that I think about it, it does that weird stopping thing as he cuts him off.
Yeah.
That's the ghost, I bet, doppelganging him.
Maybe. It was a weird shot. It has the. I mean, it's obviously like a practical stunt of them pulling the car in front of the hearse. And they do have these like stop cuts three times in it. Yeah, I guess it would be like he's imprinting on him or
maybe, yeah,
whatever the case may be. And we get this cut with no, other than the car cutting in front of the hearse, we don't get any type of info beyond that. And then we get a shot of another older gentleman.
Mm-hmm.
This time, September the 7th, which is 4 days after Markov was killed. This is at 6:40 p.m. George Mason, first violinist and concert master of the Great Lakes Symphony, taking his pre-concert nap in his Lakeshore apartment. As he dozes off, clouds of smoke start coming around him. We get some flashes, some stuff. Boom! He's a lit cigarette. Nothing else in the room is burned, just his body, like spontaneous human combustion right there. Oddly enough, another Music Man.
Also, very well done effect.
I think it looked great.
Yeah.
Upon seeing this guy explode, the camera then takes a shot out in the hallway of the apartment building. And there's a woman with her dog. She's coming back from a walk, and the dog starts freaking out and moving between her cankles and doing all this stuff and barking everywhere, and she doesn't know why. And then you see Ryder Bond, the conductor, just kind of like flash translucent into existence in the hallway and disappear. And you don't quite know if like just the dog has seen him or if she sees him as well. And then that's what you get.
Yeah, that's what you get.
Which for this episode, I mean, it's part of the mystery.
Yeah. Yeah. Because you don't really know what's going on.
And Kolchak's driving in his car when he hears about George Mason dying. And so he's trying to get there before the paparazzis get there, but he realizes that they probably have police radios on them as well. And so he gets to the apartment, and other reporters are there already talking to the police.
Mm-hmm.
So Kolchak does his Kolchak thing and interjects himself until he basically is told that the scene is being cleared of all reporters. Sergeant Mayer just tells Kolchak that Mason died because he was smoking in bed.
Yeah.
And Kolchak's like, why didn't anything else in the room catch fire? And he's like, well, and Carl's looking, he's like, there's no ashtray in the room. And he's like, that's his problem.
That's his problem. Yeah. Yeah. This Sergeant.
Yeah. Sergeant Mayer.
Sergeant Mayer. Sergeant Mayer is very, like, the police never put up with Kolchak.
Mm-mm.
But this guy is like not even entertaining the idea of putting up with Kolchak. I don't know.
It's very straightforward. And Carl's not trying to harangue him or trick him.
Right.
He's just being confrontational with him.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
They obviously have a very adversarial relationship compared to some of the other ones that they are, but it's more of a back and forth. This is just,
they don't like each other. Yeah.
Miss Sherman is the woman who was out in the hallway with her dog who saw Ryder Bond in the hallway. So mm-hmm. she did see that flash as well. And so she basically is letting them know that there was someone was witnessed outside the apartment when this happened.
Right.
Which means could be a murder or somebody they needed to question. So she goes in there. She's talking to the cop. Kolchak, rather than just listening at a corner and trying to see what she says, comes in and starts talking about her dog and mineral oil and all these things and the vet and gets himself kicked out of the scene. But thankfully, chatted up about the dog, got enough that when she did come out of the apartment, he got to talk to her and she gave him the lowdown on seeing this man who, at the time, he can't place. But she can place him because she is a music fanatic and she knows it was Ryder Bond outside the apartment. And so Kolchak has a name to put with this. He knows that she has already told the cops this exact same thing. So he is on his way out the door before the police to try to get to the concert hall to talk to Ryder Bond about Mason's death.
And this is another thing I like about this episode. There's not a lot of sets. It's a lot of on location.
Mm-hmm.
Probably because you can't get people to pretend to be concert musicians. You kind of got to have them.
Yeah.
And a lot of times they're just going to be in their hall. But like he's actually driving to these places in, I guess, Chicago to listen to these people play. You see traffic and actual like real life things. It's kind
of
neat.
Yeah, there's definitely a lot of B-roll of the highways and byways mm-hmm. of Chicago in this one. And there was one very questionable interchange I saw that I don't know how it works, and it's a wonder that it's just not Rex.
Oh, yeah, it made me angry looking at it.
It was almost like a figure eight.
Yeah.
It was, yeah.
Oh.
It's very dangerous. Carl gets to Rotterbond before anybody else. He gets to his private dressing room, and there he is with his friend who only speaks French. Carl is telling him about Mason's death. Rotterbond does not believe he is dead. The stage manager comes in and is saying that Mason hasn't answered his phone. He's not answering at the apartment, all this stuff. The stage manager is also kind of upset because it seems like he has told Rotterbond all of this.
Mm-hmm.
And he just has forgotten it. Turns out he gave him a message in the orchestra pit. People saw him do it 15 minutes before this.
Yep.
However, Rotterbond has been in his
dressing room
the entire time.
Yeah. This scene does a really good job of making me think that Rotterbond is the bad guy.
Mm-hmm.
That's why, like, I thought he was a wizard. Like,
he's kind of a jerk from the get-go.
Yeah, I thought he was some kind of magic, that he was maybe doing rituals or something and lighting people on fire.
And so he finally believes, and he starts legitimately freaking out that Mason is dead not because he's dead, but because he was so important to his work.
Yep.
That it's affecting his work is why he's very upset about it. He's not a great guy.
No.
Not a great guy.
No.
But he was there with Felicia Porter. She saw him the entire time. You know, there's no way he could be at the apartment for Mason's death. And Mara arrives, sees Carl, not real thrilled with that. So Carl leaves, heads back to INS, and we get Monique Marmelstein coming back in again. Making her presence known, trying to create a crossword puzzle for the paper.
Yeah, she's filling in to do the riddles and puzzles this week.
Miss Cowles is out sick. Vincenzo is upset with Carl because he has not been writing a story about predatory home loan practices. Because Tony was caught up in this. And it's very near and dear to his heart, and he wants Carl to rake these people over the coals, and Carl's busy working on this other stuff.
Mm-hmm.
He was taken in by a fumigation scam, basically. So Tony's telling him about Rotterbond, these deaths and everything. Updike gets super upset because he does not believe at all that Rotterbond could be involved in this because he is an upstanding citizen. At one point, Vincenzo later calls him basically like a god to the rich and powerful of Chicago, like super influential and just above reproach to Updike.
Untouchable.
Untouchable. However, Updike does offer that if anything else with Rotterbond happens, that he is more than happy to take the story or add to it because he once played French horn.
Mm.
Carl, not surprised. I don't know the level of slight that is to Ron Updike, the way that Carl says that in the 1970s. I don't know. But
yeah, I don't know.
Carl's very derogatory to the French horn.
He to horns in general in this episode.
So sorry for all of you. Yes, he has an aversion. He has an aversion as it happens. All right, so we get our next death coming up. So this is the third death of the episode, but the second combustion death. This is September the 8th at Patterson Tower Apartments. Felicia Porter, who we saw previously at Bond's dressing room, having a martini, hanging out. She's taking a swim. She's putting like her cover over her bikini. She lays down on the lounge chair, laying in the sun, relaxing, getting a tan, and apparently falls asleep. And as soon as that happens, we've got a couple that come up to also go swimming, and they see not only the smoke, the fire, the combustion, her body burning, only her body burning, not the rest of the chair, anything else, but they also see a dapper gray-bearded gentleman for just a moment out of the corner of their eye.
Out of the corner of their eye.
Mayor is there. Carl's there. They're interviewing the couple about all of this and what happens. And Mayor is super pissed at Carl's interference with everything because he keeps coming up and talking to the witnesses. But even he can't account for trying to say that, like, Porter was drunk and dropped a cigarette on herself and then burned up and nothing else did. And, like, it just... None of his theories are making sense, and he doesn't want to get the arson team involved, yet this is obviously, there's more to this the cops want to admit to.
Right.
And Carl's kind of calling him out on it straight out.
Like, yeah. Yeah, this I think is when I noticed that Carl and the sergeant, Like, there's no friendly back and forth. Carl just thinks he's an idiot.
Yeah. Carl's just not having any of this. And Carl hasn't figured this out yet. This isn't like a vampire or a werewolf where he's immediately like, tell your people to get some steaks and some silver bullets. Carl doesn't know either, but he knows that something is up and that the cops should be investigating this better than what they're doing.
Yeah, I think at this point, he just thinks it's rioters killing people. Yeah. That's what it seems like. I mean, and to be fair, is what it seems like.
Well, and then he goes back to INS. Updike convinces Vincenzo to just confront Carl, get Kolchak to quit talking about Ryder because he's always an upstanding citizen. He's not even been assigned that story anyway. And Tony reads it, and it accuses him, it accuses Ryder Bond of murder.
It does.
So Carl just loses it. He just tears it up. He's like, well, you can't do this. We can't print this. We can't. You can't just accuse someone of this. The eyewitnesses are corroborating that Bond was with them. And he's like, yes, but this last witness is now dead.
Yeah.
Yeah. Carl fully thinks that Bond is the killer.
He's all in on it.
Tony, of course, tears up the story and says, when you get back to the swindle and fraud stories, tell them about your employment here, which is one of the biggest swindles in history.
That's a really good line.
So Carl gets pissed. He takes off. He says something at the door to Vincenzo, which we don't hear. I think it's profanity.
It seems like it might be.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So Carl goes to a fire safety laboratory where they are using blowtorches to burn a Christmas tree. And I don't understand, like, their testing. I don't know. It's a whole thing. But basically the point is Carl's trying to find out, is there a substance that within like 10 to 15 seconds could just like immolate a body, just burn it to ash in that amount of time if something could be that hot? And the guy's like, it's got to be like 2,000 degrees. The government might have some stuff that could do that military-wise, but no one should have it. And he's like, if anybody has that, I would like to find out. Really no info there either. And then we get to see the tree burning again.
Yeah, and then like there's nothing that would be hot enough to burn the body that fast and not burn everything around it.
Yes.
Because napalm would do it, but napalm would burn everything.
Yeah, it would just melt everything.
Yeah.
So September 9th at 5:30, Carl goes to confront Bond during the afternoon performance. He's in his car, he's driving to the concert hall, and he sees Bond in the car with Philip Randolph Rourke, and they pass him. So he makes a U-turn and goes after him. Several blocks away, before he can catch up to him, the car is stopped. Cops are using fire extinguishers in the car. The car is on fire, but there is only one body.
Yeah.
And it's not Bond.
It's not Bond.
So Carl goes back to the concert hall. He sees the body. He sees the fire. He's all that. So he goes back to the concert hall. And there's Bond in the orchestra pit. Like, he's leading the orchestra, like, well into the performance.
Yeah, it's he's mid performance.
Yeah, dressed in, like, black tux with tails. Yep. He was in the blue suit when he saw him get in the car.
The blue suit that he was in when he cut off the funeral.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Moments before he saw him in the car, and then now he's in here. So obviously something's up.
Yeah.
That night, Carl goes to Bond's apartment. Kolchak's just going to go confront Bond for the second time, but this time, like, with the intent of, like, I'm going to trick you into telling me that you kill people.
Mm-hmm.
So he goes to his apartment. Bond answers the door, and Carl just sees him. So he just starts spewing word salad until Bond lets him in, which he does. He lets him in. Carl keeps talking to him, apologizing about things, trying to play it up as he's friendly, all these things. Bond motions for him to sit down. Bond walks across the room. Carl's talking to him. He's getting his tape recorder out. Things are happening. He starts asking him questions and looks up. Bond's gone. Gone. And this is blue suit, red tie Bond, who every time we have seen him, it has been in relation to one of these murders or tragedies.
Yes.
Carl goes into his bedroom to look for him, and the door closes, and the curtains catch on fire, and possibly an aquarium and a mirror catch on fire somehow.
Yeah.
The door catches on fire, the bed, a little bit of everything. Carl uses his hat to gingerly open the doorknob. Then the other side of the door, he uses his hand and closes it because, as we know with fire, only one side of the doorknob will get hot.
Yeah, that's true. That was, I remember being very impressed because, like, that was the actor in a room on fire. That was all practical.
Yeah, that was a lot of fire. Even if it was a set with an open, like, There was a lot of fire in a very small room.
And he wears a lot of flammable material.
Yes. That seersucker suit is going to go up in an instant.
That hat, straw.
The hat, the straw hat. Which he uses near the fire to open a door.
I don't know, man.
After the fire in the apartment, Carl's escaped. We see him like pulling up to a building covered in ivy, and we get a voiceover, I guess just in way of like to save some time, where he's been talking to people in academia about things that could happen, what this could be, and he has found out about a doppelganger,
mm-hmm.
which is a destructive ghost of someone dead who takes on the appearance of someone who is alive. After checking through some books, he has went to go find Maria. Maria is a fortune teller who works at that Romani tea room.
Yeah, I think so.
She is telling a fortune of a couple of women, and as Carl comes up, she starts talking about how, and if you meet a reporter and talk to him about burglaries that you know about, he'll put it in his story, and then the police will arrive. And the women were like, I don't understand any of that. But it was just her story because Carl has screwed her over, apparently.
Oh, yeah.
So she sits down with Carl, and he's asking her about this doppelganger situation. Of course, she charges him an extravagant amount of money that he must pay very soon.
48 hours.
48 hours, or someone's coming for him. But she does, in fact, tell him about a doppelganger, how they are an angry, vengeful spirit, and how they need you to fall asleep in order to take over your body and soul.
Mm.
And as we've seen, it doesn't... That's the only thing. The guy in the car...
Unless somehow he made him fall asleep.
Yeah. Because, but, I mean, you stop at a red light or something and then you just nod off. That's the part that, that's the only thing that doesn't quite jive with the rest of this.
Mm-hmm.
But the first guy, Mason, taking a nap. Porter, she was out of the pool, laying mm-hmm. in the lounge chair, catching some sun, obviously falling asleep. So sleep has, Freddy Krueger style,
yeah.
been involved in these people's deaths. So Carl goes back to the recital hall, which is a place that we see multiple times throughout this episode. And this time we have Bond, who is at the piano and he is playing away.
Mm-hmm.
When Carl was in Bond's apartment before the fire, he talked about Porter's death. And Bond, you know, didn't really react.
Yeah, because he wasn't Bond.
We see him now. We see Ryder Bond now, and he is very much more sympathetic of a character as mm-hmm. he is obviously disheveled. He's playing this piano, and he's losing his mind. He hasn't slept all night because he just keeps thinking about Mason and Porter and things that are happening. And Carl gives him the unfortunate news. Brother, you better not go to sleep.
Can't sleep.
Carl tells him about the doppelganger. Of course, he's not going to believe that. It sounds insane.
Right.
And then Carl starts talking about spontaneous human combustion deaths. And he starts naming some in the 1800s, and he's like, yeah, that give me something newer. And Carl does. He proceeds to list off a ton of dates about mm-hmm. people who have just burst into flame, which, for this story's sake, is arguably people being attacked by doppelgangers before someone they knew's body was taken over?
Maybe. I kind of took it that the doppelganger was jumping bodies.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe just burning them out, like, no pun intended, like, you know, like, take over the body. It can only last so long because it's not technically alive.
And then it burns
and
up.
And then it burns up.
I could see that. I could see that.
That's how I took it. I don't know if that's how they meant it, but...
So as Bond starts to come around to the idea, when he stands up, the piano, the top of the grand piano falls down and it starts just vibrating and acting crazy. And mm-hmm. so, I mean, you got a little poltergeist action right there.
Yeah.
And so Carl takes him to the one place he can get some sleep. A big old church.
Big old church.
And while he is at the church, Carl is going to try to find out who died on the day of that funeral procession.
Mm-hmm.
Because Bond has started to put together that being in a hurry may have just screwed his life up.
Mm. Yeah. And now Carl also knows that the doppelganger is coming from him too. Because of when he went to the apartment and then with what Maria told him.
Mm-hmm.
That he knows he's also on the clock. He also can't sleep.
Yeah, also can't sleep. If Carl falls asleep, he's donezo. Carl goes back to INS and starts digging through the records, which are in a bathroom.
Mm-hmm.
Updike has put them together all willy-nilly. But Carl finally finds Markov's file under A for arson.
It made sense.
Yeah. And, of course, he gets his occupation, where he lived, and how he died. So Carl goes to Markov's house, mm-hmm. where he meets his widow. And his little jerk of a kid.
Mm-hmm.
The widow starts to tie some stuff together as far as One, she's not very supportive of her husband's... Well, she didn't ask any questions about what kind of work he did.
Right, yeah.
But then also his one hobby that she found out about, which was him, like, the fact that he was in a band at some point. And by band, I guess she means like a big band.
Yeah.
And that she would come in and see him listen to his records and like he was acting like he was conducting. And she was just laughing her ass off at him. And it's just like, geez, lady. Ugh. But that gives Carl some ties to Ryder and things that are going on. And this is where she asks Carl if he wants to see Markov's horn.
She does.
And Carl just blows it off like that's ludicrous.
It's like, no.
Carl does not like brass instruments.
He doesn't.
Does not.
He's more of a string man, I think.
Maybe. It's tough to say. There's some type of story there. Things have happened with Carl in the past with music.
Mm.
So Carl leaves as Markov's son is setting two fires, because like father, like son, I suppose.
Yeah.
And then he goes to Rabino's arcade, the spot where Markov was shot.
Mm-hmm.
The owner sings the praises of Markov, honestly, and his pinball prowess,
mm-hmm.
but doesn't... You get the idea that he's mobbed up in some way, and so he doesn't want to talk to Carl about anything, you know? So Carl takes out some money,
mm-hmm.
rips it in half, and gives him one half. And he says, I just want to know where he died. I don't want to know who did it. Just and so the guy's like, okay, I want the other half of that bill. So he goes, he shows him the pinball machine, talks about the high score that Markov got, and how Markov was popped like three times and laid there, and even you can see where the chalk outline is still there from where the cops had come investigated. So Carl now knows Markov was related to the music industry,
mm-hmm.
and how and where he died. So two things together for Carl in whatever info he's got about this doppelganger situation.
Right.
And as Carl is leaving the arcade, he's heading up out of kind of the alleyway entrance. He looks down at the people, and there stands Ryder, a.k.a. Markov, mm-hmm. the doppelganger, staring up at him. So he knows he's still on his ass.
Yep.
So he's better get a move on. Back to it. We're back at INS again. Carl is in and out of the office in this episode.
A lot.
Maybe more than we've seen him in any other episode.
Mm-hmm.
But in this time, he is tearing into Vincenzo's desk. Also, he's more disheveled, and he is wild-eyed. And he's digging through Vincenzo's desk. He finds his box of petty cash and just empties it. Empties it. Monique shows up, and she's like, Kolchak, I'd be happy to give you money. No questions asked. And Carl's like, no, I owe this. Take this money. You got to take it to the Little Romani tea room. You got to go pay this lady off. And then he goes and gets an Updike's desk, starts digging around. About that time, Updike, Vincenzo, they show up. Questions are asked from them, from Kolchak, mostly related to caffeine pills and what the hell's going on. Carl's passing out. They're getting up. They get him to Vincenzo's desk. Carl's trying to fall asleep. He has been up for over 50 hours.
Yeah.
He's out of his head. He's needing these caffeine pills. He can't go to sleep. He's going to die. Vincenzo, of course, doesn't believe it. So he's having him, trying to get him to rest.
Mm-hmm.
The phone rings. And it's obviously the priest at the church
mm-hmm.
where Ryder is. So Carl's like, I got to get my ass over there. So he's just stumbling around. Probably not safe for him to be driving, to be quite honest.
I mean, he is in the convertible, the top down. So maybe that helps.
The wind. Yeah. I mean, I've taken some late night drives and coming back from events and stuff. And yeah, cracking the window does... It is a reprieve, even if it's just mental.
Yeah.
It does make it seem like it gets you back going. And Carl gets out of there right before Vincenzo finds out that he was in his desk stealing all that money, which I feel like is just straight crime. It's just crime.
It's just crime.
It's just crime.
Also, he owed a lot of money. That's a lot of money for a petty cash drawer.
Yes. It's a couple $100.
Yeah.
So Carl gets to the church, and the reason he had to get there was because the cops are there. Sergeant Mayer is there with a uniformed officer, and Ryder Bond's doctor, Dr. Chappelle, who's trying to convince him to leave. Go to the hospital, get some stay. And Carl's like, no, they're going to give you a sedative. You're going to go to sleep. And he's like, no, I can't. This is where we see one of, if not the creepiest thing that's ever happened in Kolchak the Night Stalker to this point.
Yeah.
And this is after, I mean, Carl, he talks the doctor and the cops away because they don't have a warrant, you know, and Ryder agrees to stay. It's all happening. They're both trying to sleep in the window above at the top of the church. There's an open window. And the doppelganger is there with a creepy smile on his face.
Yeah.
And flames behind him. And he keeps tippity-tapping on the window to keep them awake. Ryder's out, but Carl cannot sleep. And this guy just looks more and more in a hinge, and it keeps flashing back and forth, which I feel like is such a great shot of, like, sleep deprivation.
Yeah.
And just going mad.
Yeah, like sleep paralysis. Like, so the way that the actor's Fred Beard that plays Ryder Bond, he's really good here. Because he's moving himself in, like, ways that makes him look out of proportion a little bit. Like, his arms look like they're too long, kind of. It's genuinely...
And he, like, pushes his face out, and he's that creepy smile, and he keeps, like... Almost like he'd be giggling.
Yeah.
You know, but there's no sound comes out of the doppelganger the entire time.
It's a very unsettling series of images, like, scenes.
Yes. So, Carl tries to rest, but he can't. So, you know what he does? He's like, you know what? You're done. So, he goes to the cemetery, and he digs up Markov's body all by himself. He puts it in a bag. He puts it in his Mustang and drives it to the arcade, where he then grabs his tire iron, grabs the body, drags it, jimmies the door open, and takes the corpse to the exact spot where Markov died.
Mm-hmm.
And about that time, Markov, the doppelganger, catches up with him.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Flames kick off big time in that arcade. Carl is surrounded by fire, but this is one of those times. One of those times where Carl, for all his, like, human fear, which he does show often, but he also has that resolve. And this is the point where he's looking at he's looking at Ryder.
Yeah.
And he's telling him, like, this is your body. Get back in your body. You are dead. This is with such resolve. And Ryder morphs into Markov, and then Markov just kind of fades down into the flames, into the body. You would think that maybe the flames would disappear.
No.
It doesn't happen. Carl has to run out of that arcade as it basically explodes in a fireball. Into the waiting arms of a uniformed police officer.
It's going to be hard to explain that one.
It is hard to explain it. He can't explain it, obviously, because the episode ends with Carl in the back of the cop car with his recorder giving his final outro. Well, at least I won't have to worry about the doppelganger any longer. He's back in his own body and will probably be cremated, which is really rather sweet poetic justice for Frankie Markov. My only worry now is to find Tony Vincenzo to try to raise Bell. They've got me hooked on some stupid arson charge. But as Tony's not to play cards, and I don't know where he is. So I think I'll just spend a nice, good night's sleep in the slammer as he yawns and falls asleep in the back of the cop car as it pulls away. And that is Firefall. Episode 6 of Kolchak the Night Stalker.
This episode, so they do a couple of things I really like. First, you think it's just a murder up until almost halfway through it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's nothing supernatural other than seeing the guy.
You see the translucent aspect of him. You know as much about that as Carl knows about that.
Right. Yeah. But you don't realize it's not him until about halfway through.
Mm-hmm.
Also, I noticed the first few scenes... Everyone's really mad. Like, the first scene, INS, everyone's angry. And then they're angry with the police sergeant's angry. And then the next scene, INS, they're also... It's like, it's building all this tension up.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like building a fire, kind of. And that's what I thought of when I watched it. I was like, oh, this is kind of like... It doesn't really play into the episode any more than I think that maybe the director just really thought it'd be a neat idea.
Mm-hmm.
But I did notice it. Also... the very first thing Monique said when she saw that Carl was manic was, I'll give you money.
Monique, no questions asked.
No question. Yeah. Monique's a good person.
Yeah.
So there you go.
Carl put her in a trunk once.
He did. Put her in a cab, sent her in New York.
He's not been the best friend, but to be fair for Carl, he's not the best friend to most people.
Especially Vincenzo,
who is obviously... the best friend Carl could have.
Like, this should be the last episode of The Night Stalker. He should just be in jail for arson.
Yes.
That's it.
And they're like, you know what? We're just going to pile all these murders on him.
Yep.
We're going to investigate this stuff in Vegas. It's all happening right here. He was apparently murdering people in L.A. It's all going down. And so there you have it. The Firefall from the Kolchak Legacy Podcast. Thank you so much for listening to this week's episode as we went through this, as we do each week. With a new episode of Kolchak the Night Stalker as we build the cult of Kolchak with hopefully new listeners and new viewers to this classic show. If you would like to check us out online, you can do so at The Kolchak Legacy on Instagram, where we post up each week with usually one or two odds and ends. That's where you'll find news. And or if you want to contact us directly and not do it through Instagram, you can do it through our Gmail, thekolchaklegacy@gmail.com. Thank you so much, guys, for tuning in once again and bringing the love of Kolchak to the people, to your friends, to your enemies, to everyone. Thanks so much.
Thank you for listening to this Super Spectrum Radio production.